Thank you. This has been a little harrowing. We just finished data collection last Thursday, and then my graphics weren't loading. So we finally have a working presentation today, thankfully. Just in time, yes. and actually, thanks to your wonderful staff person, I have this, my former colleague at NHO. So the purpose of the work that we did with NHO was to actually gain an understanding of how NIFI grantees are using NIFI and other sources of funding to support public health IT and informatics activities. And then once we identified that, looking for best practices for dissemination to other jurisdictions. Oops. So we conducted a total of 16 key informant interviews. Actually, that is 17. I did not think that. With 6 states, now 10 locals, and 1 tribal health department. Who primarily received component 2 funding and indicated that they were doing something with public health IT and informatics. The interviews focused on their current high priority public health IT projects, as well as their capacity for carrying out public health IT projects. Coordinated health IT infrastructure, I think, poor public health, the 800-pound gorilla in the room for public health now, in addition to everything around performance improvement, is everything going on with high tech. And if you're not familiar with that, that is the healthcare side of health IT. And there is a tremendous amount of readiness that needs to happen in public health to prepare for exchanging data electronically in a standards-based format with healthcare. So I think a lot of the folks that we talked to felt very pulled in both directions. However, I think also a lot of people, as you will see, are seeing this as an opportunity to leverage a lot of different activities to improve their data, to improve their ability to exchange data with healthcare, and their ability to actually understand what's going on in their communities much better than previously. So as I mentioned, we finished data collection last Thursday. So these are very preliminary results. But we wanted to understand what some of the priority activities were for these NIFI grantees. And from what we have seen, we have identified performance improvement dashboards as kind of a new and emerging, I think we've heard this already, a new and emerging area for public health, which serves my purposes. That's what I'm doing my dissertation on, so I'm happy that somebody's interested. I think that also goes hand in glove with the fact that we were talking to NIFI Component 2 grantees. Hopefully we will be able to garner some additional interest out there. Preparing for meaningful use, that's the 800-pound gorilla of exchanging data with healthcare. And meaningful use, if you're not familiar with it, is basically a program run by CMS and the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT, where providers are given an incentive to use health IT meaningfully. And there are 3 public health objectives there that were identified as kind of low-hanging fruit where theoretically public health should be ready to exchange data electronically. However, there was no, even though there was a huge infusion of money for healthcare, there was no huge infusion of money for public health. So health departments are basically dealing with this unfunded mandate to try to meet meaningful use to exchange data with healthcare providers. And some of them are very creatively using some NIFI dollars and some other funding sources to try to make that happen. The other piece of that 800-pound gorilla is health information exchanges. And those are organizations set up at state, regional, and sometimes local levels that actually facilitate that exchange of data between and amongst providers and with public health and other members of the healthcare system. So that, as you can see, is kind of a significant priority for both states and locals. And then systems integration of current public health systems, their existing systems, and trying to actually, in a standards-based manner, have systems that talk to each other instead of stovepipe systems, as often are a result of funding stovepipes. And then finally, the last high priority area are enhancements and upgrades to existing public health systems to prepare for this data exchange and internal operations. Some of the funding trends that we saw, state, they are trying to take advantage of some of the funds that came out of the stimulus high-tech dollars. Some of that in some states funneled through public health departments. It really depends upon the structure of the health department and whether it went to Medicaid or some other agency. And then there were some communities, or states rather, that were working with Beacon communities that also funded out of high-tech, where these communities received enhanced funding and theoretically were supposed to have a particular focus on public health, which in most cases, unfortunately, did not happen. Also at the state level and really at the local level, we found that people are being so very creative about pooling money from across different programs to be able to fund these integrated systems. And I'm sure any of you, you know, I've done it. I've run systems in health departments. You take money wherever you can get it, and people are being very, very creative and thinking in a very systems manner to be able to build systems that are not just used for one purpose, but across many programs. On the local side, we found that they are trending toward greater reliance on local dollars as state and federal dollars are drying up. And it's kind of a frightening time to think that locals are more dependent upon local dollars. But there are some fairly creative ways of funding some systems out there through capital investment funds over time. That was actually one county that we talked to in Nebraska, have been doing that for quite some time. Local tax revenue from different jurisdictions. I know Philadelphia was doing that to implement a system. So, Magda, I think you're interested in both of those. we also are seeing, states are saying now that they're basically getting 90-10. 90% of their dollars are coming from federal funds. And locals are saying more like 60-70% of dollars are coming from local. 60-70% of dollars are coming from local funds, and states are saying about 90% from federal funds. Some of the common themes for success, however, certainly strong executive leadership and commitment to public health IT over time, and that is, you know, somewhat an intangible. It's difficult to cultivate leaders. But in places where we identified where there had been one really strong, powerful leader, we tended to see that there were also additional leaders that grew up under that person. And that over time, these jurisdictions have been able to perpetuate and take advantage of funding as it's come along and opportunities as it's come along, and certainly think in a much more systems manner. We're also seeing that coordinated departmental approaches for public health IT investments seem to be a theme for success, as opposed to kind of each program doing their own thing. Kind of the flip side of that is less control does mean sometimes that particular program priorities might take a little bit longer to rise to the surface. we heard over and over again challenges with local health departments especially, but some state health departments who don't have control over their IT resources. It's either under an IT department at the departmental level or even further removed at the county, or at a different county or state agency. And in those cases, we found people had significant challenges. In cases where we talked to folks who had greater control over their IT resources, we found that they had a greater degree of success. Also, substantive collaboration of health departments with broader HIT initiatives allowed them a broader funding base and really a broader concept of what public health can do with their IT resources. And then the jurisdictions where we found they've been having historic success over time, they think in a very much a building blocks perspective. We had some folks who went back and said, well, this started back with Turning Point, and then we had an all-kids count grant for our immunization registry, and then we took the preparedness dollars. So over time, they take the opportunity of whatever funding is coming along and making sure it fits with their own priorities to build their infrastructure. Some of the challenges, however, there are many. Insufficient workforce came up over and over and over again. NORC is actually doing a lot of work with the evaluation of the high-tech workforce program, and we're seeing that there are some challenges actually getting public health folks into these HIT workforce programs, unfortunately. Both lack of interest, and we've actually heard from some folks during these interviews and during that evaluation that folks are afraid to leave their jobs or go down to part-time to do this workforce training because their job might not be there when they get back in these economic times. So kind of coming in neck and neck, insufficient funding, no surprise, funding silos, challenges with actually blending funding across programs to build integrated systems. Outdated technology and not having funding to be able to update that technology and be ready for some of these broader health IT activities that are going on. Uncertainty about the future. This one was around broader health IT issues where folks were not so sure what is going to come down the pike next. And they weren't quite sure where to invest their dollars to make sure they were going to be able to exchange data with the healthcare industry. And then systems integration, I think, is kind of a perennial challenge. Leveraging partnerships was a very common theme in all of the, or most of the conversations that we had. Some of the major reasons folks formed partnerships were to overcome insufficient funding in silos, if they were able to, increase buying power and economies of scale. I don't think Minnesota will mind me calling them out, but there's a group of counties in Minnesota that have actually been working together for quite a few years, but they are now working with Beacon Dollars and NIFI Dollars, and they have 25 counties that are actually, they basically have a co-op for a public health IT system. And they are actually making it available now, but I told them I'd try to keep that a little bit quiet because they don't want to be inundated. but they have done some very creative funding. They've actually done some creative funding or creative payment strategies with their vendor, who's been very willing to work with them to try to even out costs over time. Another reason for partnership that was identified is access to previously unavailable data, either across different public health programs or with the healthcare industry. That we really heard especially around quality improvement, healthcare quality improvement, community health assessments, and community improvement planning. And then we also found that there are many folks who just kind of threw out this local interviewee. This is a gentleman that we interviewed in Philadelphia, and he said, you know, they decided they were going to implement an EHR, electronic health record, for their health department for their ambulatory care. And then they found out that prisons wanted to do that and FQHCs wanted to do that. They really all have this common goal. So they started pooling their money together and leveraged their common goal to be able to do that. And as I mentioned, I'm getting the 1 minute reminder. So involvement with larger health IT initiatives. The vast majority of health departments have some involvement. However, only two out of the states that we talked to actually have real substantive involvement with the HIE. This is the one I really wanted to get to. For quality improvement, we heard very, I think it is because we talked to many of the PIMS, but we did find that most of the performance improvement managers indicated that they were moving toward performance management dashboards. Several local health departments that we spoke to who were not NIFI grantees were also moving this direction. I think, again, Nebraska standout. There's some really great stuff going on with dashboards in Lincoln, Lancaster, and with some of the local health departments. So they will actually be one of our case studies. Oh, I should mention, there's an expressed desire for a community of practice around dashboards. We also heard that folks are planning to use their health IT investments for to support accreditation. So some of the resources that we're developing, some best practices case studies, and these will be basically the two-page glossies. But then we're also developing a guidebook based on information that we garnered from across the different case studies. And that will really be almost a workbook for our health departments who are looking to implement some of these systems and ideas. And then we're also working on a peer-reviewed journal article. So, any questions?
Thanks, Paula. Why don't we have questions? If all the speakers would come up to the front table, and we can do 5 minutes of questions. It's not a lot of time, but but we heard a lot of really great, interesting stuff from all the speakers. So, questions for any of our speakers right now?
What do your teams look like? Where are they pulled from?
So you can hear better.
Okay. We're good. No, keep right there. We're good. The question is, what's the composition of teams? What we've learned, and remember that it's only 5 presentations ago, but there was a triangle that I showed. And the triangle was based on the Richmond Cuddlechuck model about making policy change. So you can expect that it's actually a balanced portfolio of the team in a couple dimensions. One, in terms of what people's expertise that they bring, is they'll bring, the team will include someone who is strong in the area of the evidence base, the science, the data. Someone who will be strong in the area of what the issue is and the program and being connected to practice on the ground, and someone who's strong as being a policy political will person. So that's one balance of the portfolio. And as we work with teams and have now developed the application for teams to come through, they get to do an assessment of their interior integrity and strength. The second has to do with the levels of leadership. The teams must be led by the health commissioner or his or her designee in the first round. That's the political will piece. And to the degree that the others have senior most or at least leverageable impact and influence, we're looking for folks that are able to make change happen. The third is to differentiate between the 5 to 7 people that are on the core triangle and who is in the extended team around. We want people to be able to give the time commitment, and we have a mutual benefit commitment that they sign off on. We're estimating it's about 5 hours a month they're going to have to invest in learning over the 9-month period. They need to sign off in terms of what their give and get are. We also will have each individual's supervisor sign off so that they're there, not in their spare time. These are lessons we've learned from, particularly from both our Leadership Institute that's been CDC funded, in terms of people's commitment to learning, as well as through CityMatch, which has been CDC and HRSA funded, around our practice and policy collaboratives. Those are some of the ways to think about the dimensions, but it's an intentional composition of interdependence for most efficiency and impact. Does that answer your question, Beth?
Do you have folks outside the health department?
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. Thank you. It's an obvious one, but not one that I was explicit about. So thank you for allowing me to bring that clarity. Yes, anchored by the health department, but the issue is what will drive the composition. as long as the accountability rests in local government or public health with the health commissioner. It will be, if it's a schools issue, it'll be someone from schools. If it's an issue related to transportation policy or built environment, and it does not have to be people who are in the public sector. We have what we know, for example, on the Douglas County team, which is Omaha, is that the relationship with the public and private sector is such that you don't have business at the table, your policy will not stick because the political will is not sufficient from the public sector alone. Answer your question? Thank you.
Mary Davis. Mary, is anyone measuring improvements in public health?
Let's give it a try.
Okay.
This is like, I don't know what procedure this is.
So, don't even go there. We did include in the measurement of the performance improvement managers the performance management competencies as outlined by the council and linkages. And I can't speak to a specific one around cultural competence there, but those are the ones related to performance management. And that's where we really found the need for cost-benefit, cost-return on investment analysis, need for training. So maybe, Marge, you can help me out there.
although I do share an office with the Council on Linkages organizer, I'm not sure I can speak to that one. But I do want to say, in terms of, I think, managing our own expectations, I think this kind of change is slow. And so I love that you're asking the question, and I share your optimism about it. But I think when I think about doing QI, you know, the projects that I described us doing in this early phase are all very topical projects. They're not about changing whole cultures. They're about attacking low-hanging fruit that are high motivation, high impact, high importance problems. And the goal being that little QI, that do a little bit of quality improvement on a little problem, maybe a big problem. And if you do enough of those, you start to change culture and you start to change overall competence. But you can't do it in the reverse order. And so I think it's a longer term process. I bet if we measured it now or even next year, we wouldn't see it. And that doesn't mean it's not coming.
Are you referring to cultural competence or quality improvement culture? The competence for quality improvement culture. Yeah. So actual cultural competence, which is slightly different, because we did use 14 measures of the environment for quality improvement culture in the survey. But I had thought you had mentioned cultural competence, and that wasn't a specific measure that we had. So just wanted to clarify that. Any other questions?
A little bit different. As I was listening, and I was curious what you think about this, there were some really wonderful cross-cutting themes from the investment that CDC is making. And I have this ear for leadership, because that's what I do a lot of development in, is somebody funded by CDC and others to do leadership development. I'm just really struck, and I'll be provocative about this, that exactly at the time that CDC has discontinued its support for regional, state, and national leadership development is just the time that leadership is being called for quality improvement. So it challenges us to think about how we're going to invest in the next generation of leadership development for a culture of quality, performance measurement, and accountability, given that that infrastructure has been dismantled. I don't have an answer for that. And I don't think going back is the answer to what we have funded. But I think it might be a provocation to CDC to think about shoring up these investments by making sure that at least small L collaborative leadership is in place so this stuff sticks after the 5 years and doesn't melt away.
Great. Thank you, Magda, for that comment. So I think our time is up. I want to thank our speakers for these great presentations. I want to thank